This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov, I hope it's okay if I don't speak about Miss Universe, not Miss Israel and not Miss Palestine, because, yeah, once upon a time, Miss Universe was a big thing, and then it sort of became not such a big thing. Now, all of a sudden, it's raised its head again. So, unfortunately, all for the wrong reasons. But what I really did want to talk about were two little snippets. First of all, we can't ignore the comments that are coming out of the White House and out of the U.S. administration about the meeting between President Trump and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, commonly known as MBS, Mohammed bin Salman. And it was kind of a love fest when we saw the press conferences and when we saw the comments that were made and, you know, investment of $1 trillion. And it all looked like it was going swimmingly well. But apparently, behind closed doors, it wasn't quite so smooth. And we are led to understand that when MBS told President Trump that normalizing ties with Israel is currently very difficult for him because the Saudi people on the street are not really quite ready for it, and that the idea of fixing a firm path towards the establishment of a Palestinian state and also putting a timetable around that would be very, very helpful in helping him to convince the Saudi population that normalization with Israel is something which could be justified, then apparently President Trump was not well pleased and he didn't quite like to hear that this was not going to happen. So President Trump really is hanging a lot of his presidency on bringing the Saudis into the Abraham Accords. Now, I don't exactly know what all of his intentions are and what his objectives are behind the scenes, why it is such a major policy objective for him that he wants to achieve this. But it's very interesting that when he saw that things were going to be difficult, he really showed his anger. And apparently things became very, very, very tense between the two of them in that meeting. It'll be interesting to see where that one goes. Just one other little snippet, also unrelated, was a great video that Prime Minister Netanyahu put out, which was addressed to the people of Iran. And the video covered the issue of this very severe drought that Iran is currently suffering. And we've seen lots and lots of pictures about showing dried up riverbeds and dried up reservoirs and dried up dams. No water in Iran. Apparently, they have load shedding of their water. And that water is only flowing from the taps at certain hours of the day. And even then, it's not so great. And the Prime Minister put out this video saying, well, you know, we know about this problem because we also have water issues in our part of the world. And actually, currently, we're undergoing something of an Indian summer where the rains should have come by now and really haven't. And that's true across the whole region. So there is a lot of water problem specifically now. And so the Prime Minister has put out this video saying, we know about your water problems. We understand that. Israel has technology to deal with this. And we have ideas. We recycle almost 90% of our wastewater, which means water that goes down the plug or goes down the drain in the street gets recycled and gets reused. We know about how to do all of that. And we've got some tips for you, the Iranian people, as to what you might be able to do in order to cope with your water situation and with your drought. And we've put up a Farsi website, which you're invited to visit and get tips about how to deal with your water problems. So I wonder how that public relations exercise is going down in Iran. A very fascinating approach and idea to put forward.
Let's talk about some of the news. A body was returned to the IDF from Gaza yesterday. Identification procedure has still not been completed. I would have thought by now they would have had some clarity.
So there's lots and lots of a doubt that's being cast around this whole return of the body yesterday. What we know is that I spoke yesterday about the fact that there was an announcement that the body had been excavated, but it hadn't been returned. Then yesterday afternoon, the Prime Minister put out a statement saying this is not in accordance with the agreement, and that the Hamas side is effectively violating the ceasefire agreement. I mean, let's not forget that the original ceasefire agreement said the bodies would be returned within 72 hours. So that's a clear violation. But now what the Prime Minister was trying to say is, now that you have a body in your possession and you're not returning it, that is a clear violation. The last time the Prime Minister made a statement like that, the IDF carried out an operation in which quite a number of Hamas senior people were killed. And so everybody kind of interpreted yesterday's statement to be another kind of threat, that Israel was going to kind of carry out another operation in order to respond to this violation, this clear violation. Well, within an hour, announcement was made that the body had been handed over to the Red Cross, and the Red Cross was bringing the body to the IDF, which happened all late yesterday afternoon. Since then, nothing. We haven't heard anything. The press has cast a lot of doubt over the body, saying it's a purported body of a slain hostage. So there is some doubt as to whether it even is the body of one of the three hostages who still have not yet been returned home. I heard on the news this morning that the Forensic Institute at Abu Kabir in South Tel Aviv was also trying to determine the cause of death. Now, I don't know whether that was to say, well, they have now identified who it is, and it is indeed one of the slain hostages, and they're trying to work out how they were killed. I'm not really quite sure, but all of these messages serve simply to delay the process of announcing whether it is indeed one of the three hostages that we're expecting to be returned home, and who it is amongst those three, or maybe not at all. So we will continue to wait and see whether indeed it is one of the hostages. And I suspect that if it happens not to be one of the hostages, there could well be some consequences from the Israeli government. They may well decide to respond to that and to retaliate against this clear violation, because this is really something that could be, that is quite evil. When the families of the hostages see a body come back, they're hoping that that potentially could be their loved one, and then it turns out ultimately not to be any of the hostages at all. That's certainly something that has happened to us up until now before. So we are not ruling out the possibility of that happening again. We'll have to wait and see, be patient. I'm sure that during the course of today, we will be wiser.
A number of people were arrested in Ramat Gan yesterday, and that was after a group of people resisted arrest of a draft dodger. What's known about this?
Well, essentially what happened was that the military police arrived at the home of a yeshiva student in Ramat Gan late last night in order to arrest him for not turning up to the army, because apparently he was called up as the law currently requires, and he didn't turn up. And the law says that that qualifies you as a draft dodger, and you are subject to arrest. And so the military police turned up, and what they found there was a group of yeshiva students who had come to protest against this individual being picked up. And then ensued a bit of a riot at that home in Ramat Gan, where a military police vehicle was turned over in the street. There were scuffles, there was some violence. There were three of the people who were not destined to be arrested, ultimately turned out to get arrested because of the way in which they responded. And the individual himself, the draft dodger who was being sought, wasn't arrested because apparently he wasn't even home at the time that the military police turned up there. So this is becoming a pretty nasty situation because on the one hand, the law says that Haredi individuals of army-going age are subject to be called up. The army is actually calling some of them up. Many of them are avoiding the draft for one reason or another. And the law says that the military police under those circumstances are required, obliged to go and pick that individual up and hold them accountable under the law for not turning up for military service. And interestingly, it was only yesterday that the Attorney General wrote to the Prime Minister to say, you need to set down a clear policy about how the government and the military are required to operate against draft dodgers, because there are so many mixed messages being sent out right now about whether dodging the draft is something that will be enforced against the ultra-Orthodox community or not. Let's not forget that this whole process, this whole issue arose back in 1948 when David Ben-Gurion exempted 400 yeshiva students from attending the army in order to try to encourage yeshiva learning, which had essentially been decimated during the period of the Shoah. And so he agreed that these 400 individuals would be exempt from the army in order to what they call to do Torah Tor or Omanutor, which means to study Torah as their profession. That was the concept back in 1948. Interestingly, the governor of the Bank of Israel has predicted that in 35 years from now, in the year 2060, it is expected that one out of every two school children starting school will come from the Haredi sector. That's the prediction of the governor of the Bank of Israel. Now, if you consider that one in every two of our youth will not attend the army, that is a very, very serious issue. And the Attorney General yesterday, when she wrote to the Prime Minister, said it's not only that we are trying to deal with equality across our society to try and ensure that everybody bears an even burden of what we need to do in our society. But it is also the fact that our security needs extra people, that our army needs more hands on the ground because we are fighting wars on a number of different fronts. And the army has said quite unequivocally, we need more people. And the only way in which we will be able to do that is to draw from the sector of the population
that's growing
currently
the most.
It's growing the most and currently doesn't serve in the army. That is the obvious pool to dip into. My own view is I think that it would be very beneficial for the Haredi community to learn some of the skills that are learnt in the army. Obviously, they don't agree. And this is going to be an ongoing issue, no matter what the decisions are that are taken, whether there is a decision to exempt or partially exempt or not exempt at all. Any of those decisions will be highly controversial and unfortunately leads to a lot of conflict within our society.
Are there differing views from within the Haredi community, or is there one, you know, because I think the problem with this is we often see a community as, especially as we stand outside of a community looking in, we see it as lacking nuance. Do we know what actually is happening within the community around dialogue and the army?
There are definitely different views within the community. Let's not forget that we already have the Hashmonaim battalion, which is an ultra-Orthodox battalion of those individuals who have volunteered to be called up. In other words, some of them, of course, are subject to the draft. Some of them are not, but they've decided that they want to go along and join up in the army. There are elements of the Haredi community who support them and support that view. Unfortunately, large swathes do not support them. And so therefore, not only do the rabbis in the Haredi community say you shouldn't attend the army, but where there are individuals who feel that they wish to attend the army, their families are often not supportive, their community is often not supportive. On the contrary, very, very often are violently opposed to it. Those individuals very often who choose to serve in the army before they go home have to change out of their army uniforms so that they don't draw attention to themselves when they go back to their ultra-Orthodox community, when they're walking down the street towards their home. They don't want people to see them in their military uniform because they fear what the community response is going to be. So there are certainly pockets of people within the ultra-Orthodox community who recognize that it would be beneficial for them to be in the army, to have something to do, not to necessarily be forced to go to yeshiva, because it's not suitable for everybody. I mean, there are people who are very comfortable in yeshiva. There are many people who are not, and they don't really have alternatives available to them, and the army is a great alternative. So there definitely are different views, but unfortunately in that community, what the rabbi says goes, and it's very, very difficult to oppose that, and many of those rabbis are being driven by political and other considerations.
That is all we have time for. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.